This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, joining me on Zoom for her monthly show with us. And today we'll be discussing how more children are getting affected by COVID-19, either as patients themselves who test positive or indirectly when it's their family members who are infected. So, you know, what do families and parents, what kind of support, how can they help their kids, especially when it comes to reassuring kids in terms of getting tested, the assessment at the CACs, the COVID-19 assessment centers. We're hearing and seeing stories of, long queues outside some of the CACs, families with young children in tow. So how to support children through that, especially also, when there are positive cases in the family or if they lose a loved one, everything that comes in the process of it. So I'll be discussing that with Dr. Rajini today. So if you have any questions or any experiences that you'd like to share, if your children, if you want to find out how to support your children or if you have dealt with families affected by COVID, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Hi, Dr. Rajini. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you, Xiao Ik.
And it's a tough one to continue, explaining to our kids through these past 17 months, hasn't it? And, recently, Selangor and KL had most of the EMCO, the enhanced MCO lifted. And just to share a story, I told my son that means now, things are a little less strict. We can go out for walks, around our neighborhood. We can't go into the park, but we can go just have a walk around and just try not to, go where there are crowds. And he said, oh, does that mean that COVID has gotten better? And I actually didn't know how to explain to him. Not really. So how do we talk to kids right now in terms of where we are about the pandemic? Things haven't really gotten better and we just need to hang in there. What are you telling kids that you see?
It's more telling, I think you basically put it into perspective. Us adults as well we're getting confused with the mixed messages that we're getting coming through from the higher powers. One day, 1 minute we're hearing about the cases, how many people have died. Next minute, they're talking about relaxing rules for fully vaccinated people. So I think that teaches us a lesson. When we're dealing with children, we've got to get that message clear. Just because people higher than us have not got that message clear down to folk on the ground doesn't mean that we can't do it right by our children. So I think, yes, it's very confusing. The first thing I would say to parents is stop using things like MCO1, MCO2, MCO3, because to children, one, it doesn't really mean much. Number two, they get confused by the whole thing. So we probably just need to tell them, okay, we can go out for walks now because, they've said that things are maybe a little better around our area, but it might get worse and we may need to go back into not being able to walk past our front door again. Yeah, I think what the last 15 months or more has taught us is that we need to prepare our children for different possibilities. And we still need to keep reminding them about the measures, physically distance, wear your masks, keep your hands clean, and those sort of common reminders that I think they're now part of our lives. In fact, I see little ones coming in and the minute they see a sanitizer, they know what to do. It's like washing hands, many of them know that they need to do it for that long, singing a song, etc.
Yeah.
So the first thing is to sort of say to kids that, yes, we can go for walks, but you know, the fact that you can't go back to school tells you that things are still not so good. And yes, we can go for walks, but if we see that there are too many people, we need to take a step back and walk away from them for now.
Yeah. And another thing that sort of become normalized for many of us is getting tested for COVID. You know, every now and then somebody is a close contact or you become a close contact. And so in situations where children have to get tested, it's not exactly the most fun experience. How scary is it for them and how can parents ease those fears?
I think, you know, there's a lot of visual materials now available on the net. And all you have to do is maybe go to YouTube and look at some certain hospitals, especially a good one, British Columbia in Canada. They produced a video on how the swab test is done. And there's no harm playing things like that, especially if you know that you may be at risk or you may need to take your child for a swab test. Now, it's not something that I would prepare a child for just in case, because especially with the younger children, it just showing them now when it's not going to happen imminently, it's not going to help. Mm-hmm. So if you know you may need to be testing your children, maybe then you want to be showing them these videos and talking them through it. Mm-hmm. Now, always remember that children pick up on our stresses. So if we use negative words like, if you move, then the nurse will have to pull it really hard or push it really hard, you know. So we have to avoid that. Stop threatening them. Stop using negatives. Talk about it positively. Maybe even show them how the tip of the swab you know, is almost like a cotton bud if you have one, you know, just to show them that it's not going to be so painful. Sometimes, actually, for a lot of children, it's the fear that they get off others, and rather than actually fearing the actual thing itself.
And apart from the fear of the process or the test itself, how about the fear of what the test will mean to them? Do kids typically just take it in stride or are they harboring those fears as well?
So it depends on the age group. You know, for a lot of the children that over the years, children have had swabs for influenza. Now that's a nasopharyngeal swab and you know, some kids have had swabs of their throat done and things like that. So if your child has had one of those swabs done, you can, if it hasn't been too far in the distance, you can talk to them about the fact that it wasn't so painful the last time. Yeah. For a lot of children, what it means to have a positive swab depends on their age group. Okay. And it also depends on what they've been exposed to. If they have been exposed to a lot of negative news around them, and I don't just mean news that's on media, social media, but neighbors talking, overhearing parents talking to their friends on the phone, etc. And, you know, lots of videos circulating in WhatsApp about experiences of people. So if they've been exposed to a lot of negative experiences, then they are more likely to have anxiety about it. So beware of what you expose your children to. Mm. And if possible, try and put forward the positives. For a lot of children, actually, one of the scariest things, especially for the younger kids, is when they go into a room and they see the doctor or the nurse wearing the whole PPE. Now, in some GP clinics, it doesn't look so scary because it's just goggles, face shield, the mask. But if you go into, for example, a CAC or, you know, in some places, you see the people with the full white.
Yeah, in the hospitals as well.
Yes. So that's what scares them more. Mm. And, you know, especially if you say, oh, you're going to go and see the doctor, the nice nurse, and then you walk in and all you see are these people wearing these things, preparing them for that is actually very important.
All right. And, you know, speaking of what kids overhear and absorb from us, I think we do sometimes forget, you know, we have conversations as parents, we speak to each other, so-and-so, you know, had to go in the hospital, so-and-so passed away even, and little ears are listening, and I think we sometimes forget that, you know, they may not be processing addressing it because they just overhear it and they don't get to talk to us about it.
Exactly. And the younger children look at our facial expressions and our body language. You know, remember 90-something percent of our communication is nonverbal. And that's what they pick up on. Mm-hmm. So the fear, the mere mention of COVID-19 often comes with all those negative emotions.
Yeah. And so if a child should test positive, is there a sort of process for families to talk to their kids about what comes next?
Yeah, I think the important thing is that families need to know themselves what comes next. Yeah.
Which can be a big question mark for everyone. For
it can be.
Us.
Yeah. I mean, the SOPs are actually out there for all of us to look at. And who gets admitted, who doesn't, is pretty clear. Now, for young families with parents who are well, and if their parents have no comorbidities, and they live in a household that allows them to care for their child, if say only two members out of five are positive, it means having to isolate the two members separately, that they have access to their own bathroom that is not shared with everyone. So all these things have to be taken into consideration before it's decided whether or not a child needs to be admitted or stay at home. Mm. Now, I think the general rule is if they are asymptomatic, you know, the carers are okay and don't meet the high risk category, then most children will be allowed to home quarantine with their families. However, if the child is, say, in category two, and so that is symptoms of like sore throat, runny nose, without pneumonia, then those children may be allowed to home quarantine if they are above 2 years old. And this decision has to be made by a doctor at the CAC, or in some cases now, some GP clinics are allowed to make those decisions and monitor home quarantine.
All right. So speaking of the CAC, that's a big step in the process. And with the sheer number of cases that we're seeing every day, people are thronging the CACs because that's the process that they have to go through. So that's not an easy process if you're bringing kids along. And we will come back and discuss sort of what are some things that could potentially help parents to cope with that process, especially I think when you have non-typically developing children, particularly challenging times. But do call us if you have questions or anything you'd like to share. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. I'm discussing with consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan about how to help kids cope when they have or are affected by COVID-19. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Eek, and my guest, consultant developmental pediatrician, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan. We're discussing how to help children cope with getting COVID-19 or if their family members are the ones affected by COVID-19. A difficult process for everyone, but, you know, kids, depending on their different ages and their, you know, ability to understand and process the issue, how parents can talk their kids through it, ease their anxieties, and provide emotional support. So call us if you have any questions or anything you'd like to share. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. In case you missed the first part, something important that Dr. Rajini shared, you know, if you're in a situation where you have to bring your child to get tested for COVID-19, look up some resources online, YouTube videos like British Columbia Hospital in Canada has produced a video that is a sort of a visual depiction of how the swab test is done. And just to give an idea to kids of what the process will be like so then you're not caught off guard. But after testing, you know, if it's positive, one of the key things that people have to do now is go to the COVID-19 assessment center. And, you know, we have heard stories, especially in Klang Valley, some of the CACs do have long queues of people waiting to get assessed. And so what are some potential issues that families with young children should prepare for, Dr. Rajini, before they go for that, you know, hours or whole day visit?
Yeah, it was quite distressing to see that, actually. I mean, a few of my patients have actually had personal experiences. And interestingly, one family where all four of them tested positive and they needed to be home quarantined. But they actually described a very pleasant sort of process. But this was back in May, early May, before, you know, numbers sort of just went out of control. Mm-hmm. My advice to parents is, if you have children who have different needs, special needs, you need to make authorities aware. If your child has an OKU card, take that along with you. And when you are going to queue up, you know, there are always personnel around. Try and advocate for your child. Go up to them, say to them, look, my child has special needs. He may have difficulties waiting. Do you think there is a chance that I could maybe leave one member of my family here and the rest of us go home and come back in 1 or 2 hours, seeing as you anticipate that's how long it's going to take? You know, authorities will always try to help as long as they know what the issue is, mm-hmm. as long as we also understand from their perspective. You know, I think a lot of the times we hear a lot of complaints about, you know, personnel at CAC staff or hospitals being rude, etc. Many of these people have been at it for, gosh, months, mm-hmm. you know, without a break. Mm-hmm. Many even working double shifts, etc. So have a heart as well and try and be prepared. So if you know you're going to have to be there for a couple of hours, pack enough food, pack maybe something that your child likes, that your child can entertain themselves with. You know, one family told me how he forgot to charge his phone. So by the time they were waiting for 40 minutes and the battery ran out and the kid had a massive meltdown. So be aware, bring along your battery packs. If that's the only way you can entertain your child, you know, a child who's tired, a child who's hungry, a child who's bored is going to act out whether they have special needs or not. Mm. And this goes for all children. And you know, if you know you're going to be out in the hot sun, maybe be prepared for that as well. So, you know, I think that's what we can do as families to try and make that experience a little easier for our children. The other thing is to maybe go to the websites and see, you know, now some GPs are allowed to function as CACs, and there may be some that are near you, so you don't have to go to the bigger CACs. Mm. So you need to probably find out about that as well.
And I think, you know, very often everyone else around these families, especially if you're not aware of what their individual challenges are, it can be hard for you to stand in their shoes and understand why the kids are screaming their heads off. You know, what? So for everyone else, what kinds... rather, you know, whether a child is typically or non-typically developing, has special needs or not, what does it mean when they're kicking and screaming in the hot sun at the CAC, and how can we all be more understanding?
I think this really tests tolerance, isn't it? And acceptance as well, and awareness. So, if you have higher levels of tolerance, you'll put up with children who are kicking and screaming, especially if you've been a parent. Mm-hmm. People who are not parents may not understand it. For the parent whose child is kicking and screaming, if that child has special needs, so this was taught to me in the UK many, many years ago. So I'm talking about 25 years ago when I was there. The National Autism Society had produced these little cards that parents could carry around that says, my child is not naughty, he has autism. Mm. And I know families here in Malaysia now do that. They carry cards and they pass it around so people don't stare at them. Yeah. So if you're one of the people around a child who's kicking and screaming, I would advise you, don't stare, don't pass comment, try and help out. okay? Offer your phone as a distraction. Mm. Offer to maybe help them get some water, help them to maybe find some food or some form of help. Offer help, yeah? Don't offer suggestions, because that's sometimes the last thing you want to hear as a parent when you have your child kicking and screaming in front of you.
Absolutely. And, you know, in some worst cases, parents or family members do have to be admitted to the hospital and, you know, sometimes in critical condition. So what is it like for children in these situations? They must be so terrified at that point.
Yes, and it's again about preparing your child about why, firstly, a parent or a relative has to go into hospital. Breaking the news slowly, and again, it depends on the age of the child and how much your child understands. So if this is a very close relative, a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, as you know that, you know, your child, the person in the hospital is you know, getting worse, you also need to somehow do things like prepare your child that that person is very sick. Don't just say it. Maybe let's do something that maybe can help this person get better. So sometimes with children, doing things like, so if you're a family that's used to praying together, prayer helps. Pray together. Every night, every opportunity for that person to get better. Maybe get your child to draw a picture or paint a picture or write a note if they're older. You know, I know parents say then, oh, but you can't exactly take it to the hospital. It does not matter. Okay. You can say to the child, I'll take photos. We'll send it to the nurse will show it to so-and-so. But these are ways that children get to express their feelings. These are also ways that a child feels like he's maybe helping that person feel better. And it makes that child cope with the situation better.
And, you know, when they want to talk to that loved one, you know, when they just want to have that video call or phone call just to hear mom or dad's voice, how to help them understand that that may not be possible in some cases?
So sometimes, you know, I'm not saying that we should lie to our children, but maybe we should say to the child, okay, we may not be able to video call, but we can record a message and we'll send that message to that person's phone, and maybe the nurse will turn it on when, you know, that relative is awake and not asleep. Okay. So just because we know that it's not possible for that person's not conscious, the children don't need to know that yet. Mm. Yeah. We, although we're breaking that news gradually to them, at least make them feel like they are doing something, and that helps with coping with loss.
But there is that tendency to shelter children from bad news. At what point would that actually backfire?
I think if you've gradually spoken to the child and saying, you know, if you've started to prepare them about saying goodbye, so whether it's through drawings, whether it's through recording voice messages, the last thing you want to do is to not do that. Yeah, if you really know that that person is seriously very ill, you have been told that we're doing all we can, but we don't think this person's going to make it. You need to say to your child, you know, auntie so-and-so or grandma's really ill or dad's really ill. We need to try and do something. Very often children know from how we react. Yeah, I keep saying this. Even children who have special needs, they sense when we're upset. And they know the degree to which we're worried and we're concerned, and they'll be able to tell. So if you think you are protecting your child, you may be doing more harm, because some children may get resentful when it eventually comes out. Mm. So be open, but think of ways that you can help your child cope with it.
And so, you know, helping children who are grieving over that loss, and that's a very complex process. You know, Dr. Rajini, I don't know if you remember, but we have spoken about children and grief in a previous show with a child psychologist, Dr. Dania Pillay.
Yes.
But just briefly for now, what would caregivers need to keep in mind when supporting children, you know, after that loss has occurred and that grieving is going to be a complex process?
Yeah, and I think it's worse with COVID-19 because funerals are not being held the way that they are normally held. And for a lot of, you know, a lot of our culture, so if we look at Muslim culture, you know, as soon as someone's passed on, they have the funeral and, you know, the prayers, etc. But in this sort of setting, it's all done by certain people, a limited number of adults only allowed to the cemetery, etc. So it's much harder. And, in, you know, for example, Hindus or even Buddhists, you know, that wake is no longer that long, lengthy process that actually allows families to grieve together. So this is something that we need to watch and see, because if your child has difficulties in accepting that loss, you may need to later get some professional help to sort of help your child talk through this or somehow express it through play, etc. So, you know, I think more than ever, we need to be vigilant. And if we don't think they are coping and we are not able to help them cope, seek professional guidance and help. There are many, many NGOs out there now trying to reach out to families.
All right. And a final message, Dr. Rajini, about helping children to cope with what's happening, especially as COVID seems to come closer and closer to many families.
Yeah, I think, you know, always being vigilant, keeping your children vigilant, making them aware, but not scaring them to the point that they develop anxiety. Taking things as it comes, being open with them, depending and being able to explain it at their level. There are so many visuals out there now that help children understand this better. And remember, children nowadays, they understand things more when they see and watch and hear rather than just us talking. So lots and lots of resources out there, and be familiar with them. And the other thing is also, you know, be open with them. Don't try to hide things from them.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Rajini. I've been speaking to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, about how to help kids cope if they get COVID-19 or if their immediate family members are affected by COVID-19. And coming up, what you need to know if you are worried about this problem of empty syringes, because that is making its rounds on social media. Is it something you need to be concerned about? Well, Lim Suan will be speaking to virologist Associate Professor Dr. Chi Hui Yi to find out more and with some advice for all of us. So do stay tuned for that. This has been Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.